This is All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. A special master, more chaos on Capitol Hill, and spending effectively on education. It's time again to review the week in politics. Here for the discussion on those topics are Rob Schofield from NC Policy Watch, part of the North Carolina Justice Center, and Becky Gray with the conservative John Locke Foundation. Hey there.
Hey there.
Hi, Jeff.
Let's begin with the latest development in redistricting. Three federal judges denied the objections of Republican state lawmakers and are moving forward with a special master. Nathan Persily, a Stanford law professor, will redraw 9 legislative districts, 7 House boundaries, along with 2 in the Senate. Becky, you've advocated for independent map drawers in the past. Are you on board with this?
Well, I think that some sort of independent map drawing is a good idea. But, Jeff, what I've said before, and I'm going to say it again, is the real key to this are the rules that are in place in order to draw the maps. And if you have a set of rules where there's very little wiggle room, then it doesn't matter so much who draws the maps as, again, what those rules are in place. You know, are there enough rules in place? Have the courts, does this 3-judge panel, have they laid out the rules that will be in place for the special master to use? What we're hearing from the General Assembly is those rules still are not clear. They weren't clear for the General Assembly. They need another shot at it. So I'm not sure that this is the final answer to it. I think we're moving towards it again. Any time that there is additional instruction, direction for those maps, the rules being in place, I think we're getting closer to a better process. I'm not sure if this appointment of the special master for these 9 legislative seats is really the answer.
And I'm not sure how to look at this any other way than it's getting ridiculous. We're almost a decade into this process now. The General Assembly has had multiple chances to draw these maps. And in effect, what the court has said is, all right, they've blown their whistle and they're saying, everybody out of the pool. We're going to fix this mess. This is ridiculous. You guys have had multiple chances to do this. We're going to get somebody in here who's done this in other states. He's a respected figure. He's done it for where other states have had the same problem. We're going to get some new maps that are fair. I agree with Becky, however, that it probably not the end of it. The Republicans have a strategy to just run out the clock. They're going to keep appealing. Their hope is to have yet another election in 2018 on the unconstitutional maps that were racially gerrymandered. And what the heck, then, you know, you're into the 2020 census and we're starting all over again. But, you know, this provides some hope, some cause of optimism for those who would like to see fair maps.
But, you know, to Rob's point about the General Assembly has had multiple chances, and they have. But again, it goes back to the clear direction from the courts of exactly what has to do. We've had the Goldilocks method in place. It's sort of the Goldilocks rule. It can't be too much. It can't be too little. It has to be just right. But they're not going to tell them what's just right. And that's why we've had this ongoing question of, okay, is this enough? No, it's not. You got to go back and do it again. If we had the firm rules in place and the firm direction without the wiggle room, again, I think we'd have a much better process.
Yeah, no, obviously, I would say that they know what they're doing here. There's no mystery what's going on. They're playing games with the court at this point. I think it's over for them. I think the court is taking action. It's going to be very difficult to get out of having this done by the special master.
Now, to play it forward or roll it forward, this is a federal 3-judge panel. The judicial ladder does go up a step. Are we all in agreement that at some point the U.S. Supreme Court is going to have to decide whether or not it wants to hear an appeal of all this?
I actually don't think they can do that now. I think they've had their appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. I think they have to file a new my understanding of the situation is that they've got to file a new lawsuit, which they might well do. But I don't think there's another level of appeal at this point. I think they've already had their bite at that apple. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know the answer to that. But Jeff, I think you bring up kind of a key point here is that what we really need, again, going back to this issue of the rules and having wiggle room and having really clear direction, what we need from the Supreme Court, what we haven't had, is we need a clearer set of rules. And now, this is not the only case in redistricting. I think there's 5 active cases in North Carolina, multiple cases across the country. I think ultimately what we're going to do is we're going to have to get direction from the United States Supreme Court that really sets up, again, this really definitive set of rules for redistricting, not only in North Carolina, but in other states as well.
Well, that would be nice. But for now, yeah, let's go ahead with it.
No, and I'm not a lawyer either. I believe you are right in that redistricting cases, the defendant only gets one appeal up. I don't know if a special master or effectively having new boundaries changes the parameters for an appeal or not. I mean, that's an unknown. It's a good legal question. Perhaps we'll get an answer to that in the days and weeks to come.
I'm sure we will. But that's my understanding, having talked to some people who have been covering it very closely.
In Washington, D.C., there were indictments, an ambitious tax reform bill was rolled out, and at a Senate Intelligence Committee led by Republican Richard Burr of North Carolina, there were sharp critiques directed at Facebook, Twitter, and Google for their handling of Russian meddling in the 2016 election. From the perspective of North Carolina residents, what was the most significant thing that happened on the Hill this week? Rob, let's start with you.
Well, I think it's the fact that the vice continues to close in on the president, that he's facing more and more troubles. It's not just a North Carolina problem, obviously. This is something the whole country is watching very closely. But Donald Trump is running out of options here, unless he really wants to go nuclear and, take on Mueller or try to fire him. It's beginning to look increasingly clear that he's got terrible legal problems facing members of his administration, and that there may be some real smoking guns to come. So, I mean, to me, that's the big story, whether you're a North Carolinian or not. Obviously, we're especially interested because Richard Burr's role, but I think at some point, even Richard Burr and other Republican members of Congress, if Trump is, the smoking guns continue to emerge and Trump's popularity numbers remain where they are, at some point, even the Republicans in Congress, I think, are going to have had it with him.
Jeff, to answer your question of what is the most significant thing that happened in Washington this week for North Carolinians, I think, hands down, it's the rollout of the tax reform package. We've seen this in North Carolina. We've seen the significance that it's made to our economy, to our economic growth, people getting back to work, people investing in businesses, the economic growth that we've seen in North Carolina since 2011 with our tax reforms. And many of the federal tax reforms reflect what we've done at the state level here in North Carolina. So I think the others, you know, collusion with Russians. There was a piece out this week, a really significant piece, I think, of Donna Brazile on some things that happened in Hillary Rodham Clinton's campaign and the DNC and all draining the swamp, the indictments. It almost feels like shiny objects to me, where I think that most North Carolina families are concerned about the economy, whether their kids have a good education. So I think that the discussion, the rollout of the tax reform proposals is the most significant thing to North Carolinians.
It might be worth noting that there was actually a report out this week that showed that the states that have not followed North Carolina's tax slashing path have actually fared better in terms of economic recovery. The national economic recovery is lifting everyone, and North Carolina is no different than that. But we'd actually be better off if we hadn't pursued this path. And it's quite possible that if we really do go down this path of tax cuts at the national level, the military is worried about it, big business is even worried about it, I think we've got some real economic problems ahead.
Well, I disagree with that. I think that the economic recovery that we've seen, not only with, let me just take it a step further, it's not only with tax reform, but it's also with reining in the growth of government. It is putting money aside for savings. It's paying down the debt that we have in North Carolina, making investments in infrastructure, making investments in classrooms and education in North Carolina. I think it's paid off. We are a model across the nation for how to do it and how to do it right. 4.1% unemployment in North Carolina, the lowest it's been in 17 years. I think the data's there that shows that these reforms have made a real difference for North Carolina families. And I'm delighted to see the federal government really making a strong effort and looking at going the same way as North Carolina has. I think it's significant.
Finally, in Raleigh, a state legislative panel charged with reviewing how educational dollars are spent met for the first time. This committee is expected to eventually overhaul or make some significant changes to what some legislators have called an outdated system for allocating funds. Distributing money in a new way is a major undertaking. I think everybody can agree on that. Are there new distribution methods or practices that you think need to be implemented?
Probably. I think we probably would both agree that the system we have now is rather Byzantine. It's complicated. It's sort of not unlike the federal tax code. But there's another analogy there in that it's the result of messy political compromises that have gone on for years as to how we funnel funding to places that really need it the most, how we try to make sure that the rich districts aren't vastly better off than the poor districts. It's a bloody complicated mess. And the fact that this commission is not going to look at the overall funding, the adequacy of funding in North Carolina, and the fact that we are plummeting to the bottom in overall spending on education in the country is sort of the elephant in the room. They're rearranging the deck chairs, but I fear that they're really not going to get at the crux of the problem.
Well, I'm really happy to see this committee, this Joint Task Force on Education Finance Reform, and this is senators, representatives, they're bringing a lot of experts. First thing they've done, Jeff, is to look at a program evaluation division report that was done by that department at the General Assembly, and they've come forth with their recommendations. They've looked at it, and basically what they've said is that the funding formula, this allotment formula that we use, is very complicated. It's complex. There's all sorts of problems associated. I think they had 12 or 15 separate findings within their report looking at this. You know, at this point, I think what the committee's looking at, what we know so far, is that there are problems involved with this. And whether you think we spend too much money on education or whether you think we don't spend enough money on education, I think that we would all agree that the money that we spent needs to be well spent. It needs to be spent in the classroom, and we need to get outcomes from our students based on this money that we're spending. So them looking at this, I think they've identified some problems. Where we're going to go with it, I think we don't know that yet, but that's part of this study, and I think it's going to take them several months, if not longer, to really look at the problem, analyze it, gather a lot of data, and then come up with recommendations that are going to ensure that those dollars spent for education are spent well.
Yeah, and I think they've said they're actually going to take a couple of years to do this at best. And so who knows who will be in the General Assembly, who will be running state government when these recommendations come out. It's a constant situation in North Carolina education policy that we're always coming up with new recommendations. And, you know, that's great. But I think at some point they're going to have to also deal with the fact that we're continue to underfund public schools.
Well, whether we're underfunding it or we're overfunding it.
I don't know anybody thinks we're overfunding public schools.
You know what? No matter what, you want to make sure that the money is spent well.
Absolutely.
And that it's spent where it needs to be spent. So I commend the General Assembly for undertaking this, and I wish them the best of luck. And I'm sure we'll be talking about this, probably arguing about it, but agreeing on a lot of it over the next couple of years.
No doubt.
Becky Gray is Senior Vice President with the John Locke Foundation. Rob Schofield writes for NC Policy Watch. Thanks for the conversation.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, guys.